Welcome to Your True North, a program that explores how values act as a compass, directing our lives and work. Inspiring guests tell how key events and influential figures shaped their values and how they've used those values to create a life rich in meaning, accomplishments, and personal satisfaction. Your True North is hosted by Cindy Camp. Are you seeking your true north? Then welcome.
Welcome to Your True North. I'm your host, Cindy Camp. Your True North is a program that explores values as a compass for life's journey. Today, I will be talking with Dr. Samina Katak, a psychiatrist who works for the Cook County Health System in Chicago. Dr. Katak is originally from Pakistan. Her great-uncle, Ghaffar Khan, also known as Badshah Khan, worked alongside Mohandas Gandhi in the struggle to free South Asia from British rule. His nickname was the Frontier Gandhi. Dr. Katak's father, Jahansab Niaz, spent time in prison as a teenager for his acts of nonviolent civil disobedience against the British. More recently, her family helped start a school in Peshawar, Pakistan, for refugee children. The school is called Sabawoon, which means the dawn in the Pashto language. Welcome to Your True North, Dr. Katak. I'd like to start out by asking you about your childhood. I know you grew up in Pakistan. Could you talk about some of the key formative influences or events of your childhood?
So I grew up in Peshawar, which is a valley city close to about 50 miles from Khyber Pass, which is the famous pass that led most of the invaders into the Southeast Asia. And we grew on the university campus in Peshawar. So we were exposed to a lot of culture, diversity, activities, and a lot of exposure to education since my father is a retired teacher. So our adventures used to be looking into the zoology labs and, you know, looking at all the students, gardening, and so, you know, just growing up early in life, we were exposed to a lot of culture, nature, and literary activities like, going to all the plays that were played by most of the students in the university because of my father. So it was a pretty enriching experience growing up. Plus, we went to one of the best schools on the campus. And it was a small community, so it was very close-knit. Most of my friends lived close by, so we played together even outside of school. So it was just like a very, an environment where we were just learning and not very stressful. It was just learning while having fun too.
Yeah, it sounds like a very happy childhood and an ideal place to grow up. I also am curious about key people in your childhood, if there's one person who stands out.
First and foremost, I think my father was the most influential person in my life. He was a great role model, so we looked up to him. He always talked to us about how important education is. He encouraged that and supported us in anything that we needed to pursue our dreams and, you know, our aspirations. Plus, he also modeled it for us. So as a teacher, how he was so involved in how he taught and, you know, like the research he did, all the books that he used to have. He used to have a big library at home, so we were exposed to a lot of books. Growing up, we also used to, since you mentioned Ghaffar Khan, he used to visit, since he was my father's uncle, he used to visit, and we used to look at this person who, even when he was older, was thinking of something outside of him, you know, not just his selfish needs. He was concerned about people. He was traveling different parts of the country, even though he was not in the best of health. So it kind of exposed us to have compassion for others and think outside of you. So I think those two people are the most, as I look back, along with so many teachers, but those stand out to have mostly influenced me in my formative years.
Yeah, and I'm curious about also your religious upbringing, if you had a religious, a strong religious identification as a child.
So, you know, Pakistan is a Muslim country. Growing up, we were, it was a very moderate, tolerant Muslim home. And my father practiced. He was a practicing Muslim, so we just saw him through his actions, through his beliefs. That's how we kind of learned about, you know, how to have discipline, how to be simple, simplicity in life. Pray five times a day, be honest, don't hurt anyone, which is mostly all religions talk about those things, but he kind of embodied all that, and we looked up to him, and he is the one who taught us mostly about that.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned simplicity, and you talked a little bit about your great uncle, Ghaffar Khan. I remember once you mentioning a story some time back when we were talking about him coming to visit, and you expected, because he was someone of quite great renown, that he would need, you know, vehicles to come and pick him up from the train station, and in fact, I think you were quite surprised with how little he was carrying with him. Would you talk about that?
He was very simple, and we used to watch him because we were in awe of him. You know, he was like a tall... although he was old, but he was tall and very, we just were inspired by him, but we used to observe him. He was simple in all his actions. He was very disciplined, simple in his clothing, would have not too many belongings, possibly just traveled with like a very simple toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. So as a child, I remember, you know, they used to talk about how he encourages that in others, and sometimes it's very hard. For him, it was easy because it was part of his life, but for others, they had to really try to not waste in any sense food or belongings or even, like you said, you know, traveling. He used to travel. He was old, but he used to travel in the public trains in Pakistan. They were not in the very best of condition. And for, you can imagine, someone in 80s, but he used to do that. So he was just a perfect role model for any child who is looking at some inspiration.
I also want to ask you, you mentioned some of your values, and I wanted to see if you have any thoughts about how you really have identified the key values for you in your life. What really stands at the center for you in terms of values?
When I look at what my core values are, I think faith is very important for me. That has always helped me. My dedication and hard work. And I recently saw a quotation which brought a smile to me because it really touched my heart. And it says, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And I totally believe in that. I've learned that from my father, but I really try to embody that in whatever I endeavor to do. Honesty, compassion, empathy. The compassion and empathy has really helped me in my profession, because as a doctor, you need that. But that comes from like my core values since I was little, because just growing up, I'm from a society where there's all kinds of people not as fortunate as the rest of us. And I remember as a child also, I used to care a lot about those people.
Well, thank you. You mentioned, and yes, you work as a physician here in the Chicago area. And our audience is composed of community, but also students here at the university. And I'm wondering if you'd say a little bit about how you identified medicine as the career that you wanted to go into, and particularly psychiatry, which is a very demanding field within medicine.
Medicine was always something I wanted to be a doctor. I knew that. And probably a lot of this, my father's encouragement played a lot into it because, you know, back home when we were growing up, there was not too many professions for women. And we would he would always talk about how teaching is a very noble profession and how a physician, being a physician, is a very noble profession. And I still think both of them are very noble, as there are so many other professions. But somehow, just being a physician struck a chord with me. And I remember as children, we used to have, like, my mom used to raise chickens. And sometimes we used to pretend playing like doctors for chickens. So it just dates back to being very little that we had this desire to help. I feel that choosing this profession where I deal with people with mental illness, who are also, mental illness is a very lonely illness. So just being with them, listening to them, because a lot of times patients just need to be heard. And it's not even a matter of medications. It's just when they feel that they're heard, it makes a big difference. So just small things, like I tell my patients, my day-to-day contributions is what is important to me, and it helps me move forward in life. You know, I look at my work as I'm doing something to help others. And day in and day out, when I think about all those patients who are waiting for me every day to be seen in a clinic, I'm thinking they're here because they think I can help them. So I want to respect that, and I want to do my best. So it gives me a good feeling that even, you know, there's a few people who accomplish big things. And most of us accomplish small things, but they make a difference in the world. So I look at it as, okay, you know what, I'm going there and I'm going to help some of these, most of these people, reach out to them and have that human connection. So just thinking of my work as something that I'm doing for a good reason, something to change and make a little difference for somebody who is in distress. So thinking about work in a more positive way, which really touches my heart because that is very important to me. Of myself, so I do, you know, exercise regularly. I take part in different activities, and I've talked to you about marathons that I've done, which gives me a sense of pride and accomplishment. So just, you know, doing different things that helps me kind of keep a balance physically and mentally. And exercise is an important part.
Yeah, that's, I think, important for everyone, especially in the kind of demanding work that you do. The other thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of your work, and this is really something your whole family has been involved in, but is the school Sabawun, which, as we mentioned earlier, means the dawn in Pashto. Your family helped start this school in Pakistan for local Pakistani children and for Afghani refugee children who otherwise wouldn't maybe have any kind of formal education. Would you say a little bit about the educational system in Pakistan?
Pakistan, the education system is different from here, and the literacy rate is still, it has improved over the last two decades, but there is still a lot of room for improvement. And basically, what we are trying to do is, and this is part of just our goal in life, is to do something in addition to what we are doing as part of our vocation, is to maybe, because Pakistani government cannot reach all children. Plus, I'm sure, I don't know, the listeners might not know, but we have a pretty big population. It's about 120 million people. So it's Pakistan is a poor country, so it doesn't have all the resources to reach all and every child. So basically, what we are doing is to try and do something on our own. And as we cannot absolve ourselves from the responsibility to do something, and you know, it's a group of friends, and we have come up with this idea to help the children who cannot reach some of the public schools, which the big cities have, you know, public schools, but these children are partly going to work during some of the part of the day and then trying to go to school. So we are trying to bring the schools to these areas which are underserved, and they have a lot of people who are still living in refugee camps, and some of the poor people who don't have the access, like, you know, in terms of transportation or money to go to the public schools in Pakistan. So we are trying to, this is a very small effort, but small is beautiful, and it is at least something that helps us feel good about the fact that we're doing something about, maybe adding to what the Pakistani government is doing to help increase the literacy rate, which I was looking today, it's gone up to about 60%, but that's mostly primary education. So when we break it down, primary enrollment is high, but then there's attrition as, you know, the years go by. So hopefully we still have a long way to go, but it's just a small effort from our part, and it is very rewarding for us to be able to do that.
I know, as you mentioned, there is a good deal of poverty in Pakistan, and there are families who need children to be out working and earning an income to bring home. How do you convince a family to allow a child to go to school, because potentially that means less time for them to be working?
It's hard, because in a way you understand where the parents are coming from, but it's a child's life. So there's a lot of work being done in that area. And, you know, we recently opened this school, and we had to move because the rented school building, we had to get out of that building. So we have built a new school. And before we moved to that school, there was a lot of preparation done in that area by people visiting the families and encouraging them to look at the future of these children. And it needs a lot of encouragement. And we did have a program there where we invited all the local parents to come and see what we are all about. Mm-hmm. And education is not about encouraging people to be un-Islamic, because that's one of the fears, that, you know, this education might mean make my children more un-Islamic. It's not that. It's just adding to their values something that would help them have a better life in the future. So it's a lot of hard work, but there are people who are doing that on the ground there, and it's an uphill battle, but it's working. We cannot just stop doing it by thinking they will not listen, but we just continue to go out, talk to the parents, talk to the women, and there are some of the parents are coming to the school, and they are also taking part in some of the classes. So,
and they're also
learning,
sitting and learning. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think that's also helping.
A wonderful benefit for the whole family. Mm-hmm. What kind of work do children do in Pakistan, those who are working already at a young age? And how young might a child be working?
I've seen children as young as 11, 12. They're working in, like, brick kilns, carpet, you know, manufacturing carpets, or, you know, just domestic help. I think domestic help is the most common one. That's what we were exposed to also as children, you know, growing up. Our friends, we were friends with the people who used to work in our homes, and we would encourage them to go to school, because we would always feel like, why are they not going to school, you know? So domestic help is a main one.
Dr. Khattak, I'd like to ask you, you've been talking about the education system in Pakistan, and I just wondered if you'd say a little bit about special challenges that girls face getting an education. And I'm specifically thinking about the incident with the young woman, Malala. If you could just say a little bit about the educational system and any challenges or barriers for girls.
I think education for girls is still a big challenge. And basically, the reason is that education is considered to make people, not everyone, but in some areas, it's considered to make people less Islamic or un-Islamic. And so that is something that really needs to be talked about, and people have to be encouraged to send their children. So I, as you mentioned, Malala Yousafzai comes from a part of Pakistan that's a part of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. It's called Swat. And one of the things that she dealt with was that the Taliban were against some of the girls going to school, and she really stood up for that, and to the extent that she was shot. Yeah. While she continued to pursue the education that the Taliban were asking her not to. In fact, she received death threats and all that, but she pursued, and here she is now. She's a spokeswoman and a very strong and effective one, and we are also proud of her, because I think she gives courage. She gives courage to the girls to not give up. And everyone might not become Malala Yousafzai and win a Nobel Prize, but they can pursue their dreams and go for what they wish to accomplish in life. And there's so many women. One of my cousins, Salma Ataullah, is a senator in Canada. And so, I mean, you can accomplish anything that you set your mind to. I mean, you know, my father used to always say, you know, my sons and my daughters are alike. And I hope one day everyone in third world countries or all around the world should start thinking like that. We need the same education, the same environment, yeah, the same opportunities. And I think it's worldwide that needs to be looked at, that girls and boys needs to be treated at equal.
Yeah. Now, in this country, we don't have the same resistance to educating girls that we see in some other parts of the world, but nonetheless, there are certainly some of the same sort of misunderstandings. I know that we tried to partner here locally in Chicago, one of our public schools, with the Sabawon School, and we ran into resistance on the part of school staff who didn't like the idea of partnering with a school in Pakistan. Some of them had family members who were serving in the U.S. military in places like Afghanistan. And I remember at the time your observation was that then the people here are in some ways very much like the people in Pakistan. They fear what they don't know, and there's a lot of ignorance on both sides. Although there are special challenges for girls in Pakistan, I think we all have these sort of barriers that we have to work through, and misunderstandings and fear. Fear certainly controls people in unfortunate ways, doesn't it?
Definitely. And, you know, the world is, I mean, people have always been interrelated. I mean, everything that we do is related to something else, and more now with the social media. I mean, you know, what happens far away affects, you know, us here or anywhere in the world. So I think this interrelatedness needs to be looked at, because we are no more isolated from each other, you know, us here, them there. So we have to work in we have to work with each other.
Yeah,
I think that's the only way forward.
It's a beautiful reality, but it's also a challenging one.
It is.
So. Yeah, thank you for sharing your thoughts about that. Providing an education, mm-hmm, sounds like a potentially a very great opportunity for a child to have a different life. I know that your great uncle, Ghaffar Khan, also believed in and opened many schools. I find this interesting because I know he was a very wealthy man, but he chose to live, as you mentioned, so simply. He spent most of his life working to free Asia, South Asia, from British rule. But he was also really committed to education and committed to involving people in the life of their community. Can you say a little bit about his work with schools?
He built a school, and my father went to that school. That was one of the first schools that they built, and that was close to our village. It's called Charsada.
Right, and I know your father, of course, was formally educated, but also when your father was in jail, if I recall, he also received a sort of informal but still very valuable education because he was in jail with so many other people who were passionately committed to the cause of independence in that part of the world, and many of them very well educated, very committed people. So I think his education was made in a number of arenas.
That's true. He wrote a book about his life, and he talks about that whatever I learned, you know, sometimes a negative experience can become a positive experience. So he learned a lot, and he said that what I learned in prison was more than what I could have learned in a school, because he was around so many literate people. So he learned the Quran with meaning while he was there. That was a big accomplishment. And then also he was with one of the most famous poets, Ghani Khan, who is Bacha Khan's son. So he was with him. So he was exposed to a lot of literature and poetry. So you're right.
I'm also wondering, choosing nonviolence, choosing not to respond, and of course the British were very hard on the local people. They were there, a colonial form of government. They often used violence to keep the local people under their control. And the decision by your great uncle, Ghaffar Khan, Bacha Khan, by Mohandas Gandhi to use nonviolent methods was really extraordinary when we think about the times in which these people lived and the sort of experiences that they were having at the hand of the British. Could you say anything about what helped your uncle see that was the path he really felt was the better one?
I think I've talked to my father about this, and I've read some of the books that they've written. I think some of this comes from his dedication also to his religion, which talks a lot about nonviolence and being humility, being humble. And he thought that, this is what I've gathered by looking at this movement, that violence does not go too far, because violence begets violence. Mm-hmm. But nonviolence hopefully would help them gain the respect and help them achieve the goals in life. So I think that's why he went towards nonviolence, because Pathans or Pashtuns are known to be, it was considered to be a violent culture, but that also kept them behind. So he thought that putting the guns down, getting education, would help them get that place in society which they don't have, and for them to make the improvements in their life.
So it sounds like for both moral and for strategic reasons, just very practical reasons, the
Correct.
Path of nonviolence seemed to be the better path. I'd also like to ask you, I guess if you see specific ways that those core values that you've talked about have been really realized, fulfilled in your work. You mentioned listening. It sounds like listening has been a big component of your work as a physician. Are there any other core values that you see as being at the heart of what you do?
During my pursuit of my professional life or profession, I went through a lot of changes coming to America. Then I had to go to an underserved area for 3 years to be able to practice as a physician in the United States. It has taught me to look at what's really important, because being away in the rural area. It was an enriching experience, but it was a very tough time of my life.
Can I ask you where you were working then?
I was working in the southeast portion of Missouri. It's called the Boot Heel. It was a small town called Sykeston, and I was there for 3 years. And since it was a small town and my husband is an engineer, he could not find a job there. So I was there by myself in a small town. And this was around 1999, 2000, 2001. So 2001 was also very traumatic. And it was doubly traumatic for being a Muslim American.
Yeah, it sounds like that three-year period would have been incredibly difficult. As you said, you were far away from your family as well as from your spouse, working with a very demanding patient population and in a rural area. And then, yeah, the events of September 11 here in this country, very hard for many Muslims.
And what helped me through those times, and I'm coming back to my values, is my faith is what helped me, because it was tough being by myself, having to deal with chronic mentally ill patients, high volume, high stress, being away from family. I was like an ambassador for my background, just helping people understand that all Muslims are not radical fanatics. We are also, you know, we are all the same, you know, evil and good is everywhere. So basically, it kind of helped me in the sense that I used that as I found courage in the fact that, okay, you know what, I can be myself and I can help people understand that you can be a very good Muslim here in America and help everyone. As my father always told me, since coming to United States and not being able to help as much in Pakistan, he would tell me, you know, Allah or God is for the whole humanity. He's not just for one religion, one kind of people, one nationality. So that kind of helped me pass that hurdle that, okay, I'm here, what I'm doing is significant, and it helped me kind of become more comfortable with who I am.
You've been listening to Your True North with Cindy Camp. The opinions expressed on today's episode are not necessarily those of WXAV 88.3 FM, St. Xavier University, or the producers of Your True North. For a copy of today's program, you can download it as a podcast by visiting yourtruenorthpodcasts.com. Thank you very much for listening to Your True North.